This is The Tenth Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The Tenth Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
And this is the second Saturday of the month, which means it's the Sandra Moran Radio Book Club. Very excited today because we have two eminent authors on the line. And we're going to be talking about Catherine V. Forrest's body of work and career. And the other panelist is also a well-known author and humorist, Faye Jacobs. Catherine, are you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Good morning.
From the West Coast.
Faye, are you on the line?
I am online, and good afternoon on the East Coast.
And we're here in Central Time, so it's early afternoon. I want to start out by asking each of you, and I'll start with Catherine, when you started writing, because it's been an illustrious career so far.
Thank you very much. I think, like most writers, I've been more or less writing all my life, but all of the goodness really started at age 40 when my partner at the time told me, "You've always wanted to write a book. Why don't you take a year and write a book?" Actually, she said, "Why don't you take 6 months and write a book?" Which is like as saying, "Why don't you become a brain surgeon in 6 months?" As it turned out, because 3 years later, after I'd learned my craft, Curious Wine made its way into the world. So the magical turning of 40 was really the central point. And I think it was such an advantage because I had a reservoir of life experience to draw on at that time.
Faye, I'll ask you the same question.
Well, it's sort of the same. I've been writing all my life, but I could not write what I really wanted to until I was in my late 40s, early 50s in Rehoboth Beach, where I could be out and proud in print as well as in my life. So I started writing my stories a long time ago, and some of them I had to publish under assumed names. But in 2004, A&M Books published my first book, which was As I Lay Flying, and so I kind of had a late start.
I want to ask you, and Catherine, again, I'll start with you, what genres do you read? You write in a variety of genres, so I'm just curious what your preferred genres for relaxing are.
And that's actually a great question. I've been drawn to the writing of women all my life, and at my age and historically speaking, women were not taken seriously at all in the literary world. That's a phenomenon, quote-unquote, that really began in the 1950s. I mean, when you consider that a writer like Margaret Atwood had written four books before the New York Times deigned to notice her, but we occupied the genres. I mean, we were very prominent in mystery, science fiction, romance, all of those. And so, you know, I think that we tend to write what we read. And so that's how I was able to kind of cross the genres, plus the fact that I had a publisher who welcomed me to expand so that I didn't get trapped. Like a lot of writers are, you build a reputation in one genre, and that's kind of where your publisher wants you to be because you're successful. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but
it does. And Faye, you write humor. Do you read humor or do you read other genres?
I read other things. I do read humor sometimes, but I am a history nut, and I love our LGBT history. I'm right now reading The Gay Revolution by Lillian Faderman, but I really read mostly nonfiction and mysteries. But I write humor, and it's really just essays about my daily life, and there are other people who write those kinds of things, and I tend to read their books as well.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I have to say, I read everything across the genres, too, Faye, and I have to say that you are so welcome in the literature. I wish we had more of you in the 70s and 80s, because if there was anything lacking in our literature at the time, it certainly was humor.
It was humor. But, thank you so much.
Anyway, it's just really great, you know, that you do what you do. It's one of the underserved, I think, parts of just literature in general.
I certainly agree with that. Faye, I want to congratulate you because I edited newspaper columns, and it's hard to come in at that length and work your way to a perfect ending, and you do that beautifully.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you. Thank you. It's hard to write 500 to 800 and make it make sense sometimes, but we try.
Catherine, I wanted to ask you, a lot of people are familiar, of course, when women are asked, what was your first lesbian book? Curious Wine is mentioned so often. You're so well known for your romance, but I'm not sure everyone is aware that you write science fiction as well.
I wish that more readers would find my trilogy, beginning with Daughters of a Coral Dawn. It was actually my second novel, and it has achieved a bit of a cult status by itself. But let me say this about my science fiction work. First of all, I think it's the most demanding work to write. It's the most demanding audience. Some of the most creative work out there today is in the science fiction realm. I mean, The Handmaid's Tale is actually science fiction, but nobody calls the work of a literary writer like Atwood science fiction, but it is. And the three books that I've written, Daughters of a Coral Dawn, Daughters of an Amber Noon, and Daughters of an Emerald Dusk, I think they represent some of my very best work. They also represent my thinking of my gender over my lifetime, about the essence of women and what we're capable of and what's possible to us. And I'm proud of those three novels, and women do continue to find them, and it's very gratifying. It's a part of my body of work that I'm glad is out there, Elizabeth.
You should be proud. Last night, I finished Daughters of an Emerald Dawn, and I had just seen the documentary about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, RBG, and I thought, how wonderful the meshing of these two feminist works are. I want to congratulate you, too, the way you worked in Greek mythology. It was just a brilliant piece of writing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I had a lot of fun in the books, too. Mother is one of my very favorite characters across any of my books.
Let's talk a little bit, too, about your thrillers, the Kate Delafield series. What made you start writing mysteries?
When I first started to write, you know, Curious Wine was my first published work, but it was not the only thing I was working on at the time, which was a good thing, because when Curious Wine came out, Barbara Greer, the publisher of Nyhat Press, immediately said, "What else do you have, Catherine?" So I'm glad I was working on a few other things, but I came out of the business world, and one of the things that I wanted to write about was the abuses of power in the business world. For one thing, at that time, and even today, the business world does not provide much of a background in any of our novels, despite the fact that most of us spend a third of our lives there. So I wanted, and I was in management when I was in business, so I had a lot of material that I was very angry about that I wanted to convey in fiction. So that was the genesis of it, and so I decided to set a murder in the business world and have one of these primary abusers of power be the murder victim. And it started out with an amateur. I was going to have an amateur detective. This was 1983. Which I did. I did a draft with an amateur detective, a young woman whose first day it is on the job, and she discovers, actually overhears the murder being committed. But then I realized that I needed to have the police on hand if I was going to actually have a real homicide. And in 1983, women in police work had finally won all the court cases that enabled us to move out of the work that we were confined to as juvenile and as jail matrons and things like that. So we were moving into the higher echelons of detective work. And so Kate Delafield walked onto the page, and I immediately discovered that this was an amazing discovery for me, because here was a woman who was a lesbian in a hyper-homophobic organization. She was in a high-visibility, high-pressure position there, and she was a lesbian. And so I could explore how she dealt with that, combined with the fact that as a writer, one of my great passions as a writer has been the closet. And if ever a character had a reason to be in the closet, it was Kate Delafield in this lethally homophobic organization that existed in the 1980s.
And Faye, I want to ask you, you've seen this transition for women from you know, being confined to certain occupations, such as, say, secretaries and teachers, all the way to where women can move into the higher echelons. How important do you think books like this are for young lesbians to read?
Very important. And I want to go back one second to talk about the fact that Curious Wine, in its time, we were so hungry in 1983 for anything that reflected lesbians in a book that the success of Curious Wine came from that hunger. And later, as the years went by, we could all explore the different genres that our favorite authors were writing, like science fiction, like mysteries. But those initial books, the romances, were the only thing that really kept us in touch with our community. And it was just amazing. And so I want to thank Catherine for that.
Thank you. In
the other ways, I love to see books that our young people are reading now, even if they are much more contemporary than the ones we read in the 80s. Because I can't tell you, you know, I do this show and I go around and I do a one-woman show, and a lot of history in it. And the young girls come up to me and they say, "We had no idea. We didn't know what you went through. We didn't know you couldn't do these jobs or couldn't be out." And it's such a learning experience for these kids, and that's why I hope they go back and read these older books.
I hope they do, too. I started reading lesbian fiction in the mid-90s because I came out late, and I've kept a list of every book I've read, and I looked to see when I read Curious Wine, and it was 1997, and I just reread it. And it holds up beautifully. This story in a ski lodge in Tahoe. I know women who are coming out in their 20s and 30s and 40s, and they're still afraid. There's still things to be fearful of.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And that's the thing. I remember reading it in 1983 as a young person having just come out of the closet, and it was so important to me then, and these books are still important to the young people today.
Catherine, I'll ask you, what influence did meeting other writers have? I believe you attended in 1983, when Curious Wine was published, a National Women's Studies Association convention in Columbus. What was it like to meet other authors?
I'm so glad you asked that. Talk about a central event in a person's life. That was just the most, it was a watershed for me. First of all, I met my idol of all idols, Ann Bannon, who I just about got down and kissed her feet, because her book, Odd Girl Out, was one of the very first books that I discovered that actually told me who some of us were and how some of us lived. So she was there. That was absolutely amazing. I met Nancy Bariano, the publisher of Firebrand Press, Margarita Donnelly, who was publishing Calyx magazine back at that particular time. Very, very significantly, I met Lee Lynch for the first time. Another reason that this conference was so important to me, aside from connecting me with some of my most important colleagues in lesbian fiction, is that at night we all stayed in the dorm. The convention was held on the campus of Ohio State University, and so a lot of us were staying right on campus. And so at night we would all get together, and a lot of us read from our work, including Lee. And Lee read a short story, and afterward I just kind of took her aside and I said, "Lee, there's something about the point of view that I want to talk to you about in your story." And anyway, little did I know, Barbara Greer was kind of sitting there with sort of elephant ears overhearing all of this. And anyway, the upshot of it was, it turned out that I came home on the plane with the manuscript of The Swashbuckler under my arm, and it was my first edited book. So that all originated as well in Columbus. Not to mention that people like Nikki Giovanni, Margaret Atwood, Paula Marshall were there, and it was just amazing. It was just amazing. It was eye-opening. It was inspiring, and it certainly put some rocket fire under me.
That's a Hall of Fame right there, and that includes you, Catherine.
Thank you. T. Corinne was there. It's just hard to even remember all of the really fabulous women I met, and of course Barbara and Donna. So so, from Naiad Press.
And Faye, you've met a number of well-known authors who've had an influence on you, right?
Well, certainly, and we can't go too much further without my talking about Anita March and Muriel Crawford from the old Naiad Press, and Catherine, you worked for them and for Barbara, and they, those two women were the reason that my books got published in the first place, and they were among the four who started Naiad Press, which, of course, became the most famous lesbian press in the country.
I can't tell you how important those two women are. They should be far more visible in our history. They absolutely underpinned. They made it possible financially for Barbara and Donna to create Naiad Press.
Absolutely. And they also, the thing that was so important, I think, about them was they didn't give up. They must have gone to 20 printers who refused to print lesbian materials before they found one that would do it.
It
was Anita who risked it all by having her first book out there that she wrote. And so it really was a wonderful collaboration for many, many years with Naiad Press.
Not to mention, Faye, that she wrote under the name of Sarah Aldrich, and she wrote a lot of books that were also very, very important.
Exactly. I mean, she wrote under the name Sarah Aldrich. I think there were 14 in total. The last one she wrote when she was 92 years old.
She's an amazing woman. Somebody needs to do a biography of her.
I'm trying to talk Marcia Gallo into it.
That would be wonderful. You know, I mean, she was the first lawyer. What was it at the anyway? Memory fails. I know that she had a significant legal career too.
And she worked for the World Bank. She went all over the world with Muriel as her assistant, and they went on the Orient Express, and it was amazing. And those two women were really pioneers in lesbian publishing and writing.
They truly were an extraordinary couple.
It's amazing to me how these names ebb and flow. I just heard that Nancy Manahan is doing readings at the National Women's Music Festival in July. And I remember when Lesbian Nuns Breaking Silence came out, I worked for a very Catholic publishing company, and everybody was talking about it. It was just the buzz in the hallway. And that book really helped. Well, I don't want to say it put Naiad on the map, because Naiad was already on the map, but it made mainstream more aware. Isn't that true?
Not only the financial
boost that they needed.
And Catherine?
Definitely. I was going to say, it really did. They made a great deal of money from that book because it was an absolute smash bestseller nationally, and there were a lot of international markets as well, all sorts of subsidiary rights and all of that. So it really was the making of Naiad Press, which had been kind of scratching along financially before that book came into being. So, yeah, it was highly controversial. There's a great biography of Barbara called The Indomitable Barbara Greer by Joanne Passett, and it goes into a lot of detail about that particular book and how central it was in lesbian history.
Let me ask you both how women found out about Naiad books in the 80s. Because, as I say, I came to lesbian fiction in the mid-90s. Was it through bookstores, feminist bookstores? Was it through word of mouth? They certainly weren't in most public libraries. How did women find Naiad? Catherine?
I would have to say that it was the personality power of Barbara Greer herself. She was editor of The Ladder, which was a publication of the Daughters of Bilitis, which was the very first lesbian organization, and The Ladder was their publication. Barbara was its editor for many years and acquired quite a mailing list of women all over the country who subscribed to The Ladder, and a great many really well-known authors. They submitted articles and book reviews. Jane Rowe wrote for The Ladder, Lee Lynch wrote for The Ladder, various people. And so when Barbara first created Naiad Press with Muriel and Anita, and of course her own partner Donna, she had that mailing list to begin with. And then, you know, I think it was a merger of various forces in the country, because no publisher would touch anything that we wrote. So our publishers began to produce books, and that led to the rise of our bookstores. To have a book come out from Naiad Press in the 1980s and 90s, Barbara was a force. She called every bookstore in the country and all but browbeat them into carrying her books. She called mainstream books. She would call Borders or Barnes & Noble don't you try one bookshelf of lesbian books? And she says, I'll give you the books. And they would. And, of course, then they'd end up with an entire section because women would discover them. So she went to every length that you could imagine to promote books all over the country, and it was like a synergy, and it was combined, you know, with the rise of our music. You know, lesbian culture began to take shape, to take form, and through our books, we found each other through our books. Our books and our music, I don't think that there's any question but what they absolutely form the underpinning of everything that we have today.
I agree. When I did come out, first place I ventured was Phoenix Books here in Kansas City, and it was a lesbian bookstore, and that's where I found community because I didn't know where else to find it. And Faye, you remember those days.
That's right.
Oh, I certainly do. And with Llamas in Washington, D.C., and Lambda Rising in Washington, D.C., they were our community centers, these bookstores. And that is where we went to find others, to find our books, to find people and a community bulletin board. And it was what we had before the internet. And, you know, now people can go on and join a lesbian meetup group or look on one of 1,000 sites to go see what's going on. But we had our bookstores. And I have to say, I miss them.
I do, too. It was Sisterhood Bookstore for me. In fact, Sisterhood was where I first met Barbara Greer because she turned up there with Fault Line by Sheila Ortiz Taylor. And I went to see Sheila Taylor, you know, because of that book, and I had no idea that Barbara was there. So after I got my books, Barbara got up and talked about NIAID Press, and so afterward I went up to her and I said, I have this novel, which was Curious Wine. So the bookstores represented the beginning of my career, Faye.
Yes, we really miss those bookstores. They were our lifelines. There's a great history there that needs to be explored as well.
I heard musicians there. That's where I first heard Leslie Feinberg, Stone Butch Blues.
I remember.
You'd find out about therapists, about, you know, support meetings. Women were starting to have families with their partners, so you might find out where families with young children could get together, and it really was a lifeline.
It was, and it was really fun for the writers, because back in those days, we were practically rock stars. Just traveling all over the country, which I did with Barbara and Donna. Yeah, they were fabulous, fabulous years for me being with NIAID Press, because Barbara toured me everywhere, and I got to meet the amazing community that we were part of. Gosh, I met the most accomplished, wonderful women. I just found my own pride in my lesbian sisters just escalating just all the time. I just found out what an extraordinary group of people we truly are.
I love what you said about the synergy between the music and the books, and I would add in film, too, because film was just beginning then to cover coming out stories and lesbians.
Absolutely.
I want to take us farther back. The first Santa Moran Radio Book Club was in December 2015, and Anne McMahon, Marianne K. Martin, and Cheryl Pletcher and I talked about The Price of Salt, and the reason we did that book was Carol was newly out in the theater, and I saw quite a few posts by younger women saying it was so slow, and I don't understand why they were so afraid, and what was with all the smoking and drinking. And Catherine, I was so tickled to see you comment in a group, and it was such a cogent, wonderful comment about those days, the 50s. Do you remember writing that?
Oh, of course I do. Yeah, I do. Yeah. Seeing that film was a very powerful experience for me, and there's no overstating how very powerful that book was and how important it was to so many of us. Its reputation is that it's the first lesbian novel with a happy ending. I mean, if you consider a woman having to give up her child to be with the woman she loves, a happy ending. But in 1952, it was. So that film and that book, that was what it was like. The film captured the book, I thought, just exquisitely, and it was a hugely emotional experience for me to go back to those times and just see that book brought to life on the screen by those two absolutely fantastic actresses. I thought it was just a magnificent achievement, that film.
Faye, what about you?
Well, I loved the movie. I had loved the book for many years. And I can understand, though, in the age of all of the quickness of the internet, the quickness of television, many older films don't hold up because they are plotting and slow, and that's the way it was. But what these young kids forget is our lives were that way too. I mean, you couldn't just text somebody and say, meet me over here. You had to go someplace and see the person and make eyes at the person and maybe be scared that they weren't a lesbian. And, you know, all of that slowness of that film was our lives. And I think that's what a great class would be, to talk to young kids and say the pace had to be that slow because you were putting yourself in such horrible jeopardy if something was amiss. You could be fired, you could be jailed, and that's what I think the young people need to see and need to understand.
Not only that, Faye, but, you know, the bar culture was basically our culture. I mean, that was very much where we found each other. The novels of Ann Bannon and Lee Lynch really convey what that was like, because most of Lee's work and all of Ann's work are all centered around there. And that's where so many of us, myself, I came out in Detroit in 1958. I was working at the General Motors building at the time, and the women there took me out for my 21st birthday, and they went, as they called it, slumming. And one of the places they took me was to a lesbian bar in Detroit, and I walked in the door, and I thought, this is home. And the very next day, I went back by myself.
How wonderful. But we do. We have those experiences that I think young people don't have today.
Thank God.
Into my first gay bar in Washington, D.C., and all by myself at an early hour, which, as it turns out, was foolish because nobody came till 9:30.
Right.
But, you know, those are things that these kids don't have to do. They can go to any event they want to and meet people.
I must say, I feel really very, very proud of our generation and what we accomplished. Going to any gay pride parade or function of any kind just brings me to the brink of tears when I look at all of these young people around us, because women of our generation helped to make this happen, helped to make it possible. And I'm very proud of all of the writers that I came up with, all of the publishers, the musicians, everybody. You know, we're part of, an incredibly courageous generation, and it's absolutely my lasting pride, both as a writer and as a person.
And that leads me to a question for each of you. Catherine, have you ever considered writing your autobiography, because you have seen a sea change in the world of lesbian fiction and the larger world?
I should put my spouse on the phone because she's at me all the time to write my autobiography, and I feel a bit of resistance about it. And, you know, I think a lot of it stems from the fact that writing itself is an act of exposure. I don't know. It may happen. Right now, I'm kind of involved in thought work and some research for the next Kate Delafield book, which may very well be the last one. And who knows from there? I may get over my resistance. I don't know.
Let's take an informal poll. Faye, what do you think? I say yes.
I say absolutely yes. You would be doing a public service. There you go.
Thank you. I think all of our lives would make a pretty good novel.
And Faye, let me ask you that question too, because you tour with your one-woman show, and so you essentially are writing your autobiography now. Have you ever considered putting it in book form?
Well, yes, actually. I'm in talks about it, possibly. For the last 20 years, everything I have written has been my memoir. So from 1995 on, it's written. It's just a matter of, you know, it's in five books with different stories. But I think I am going to go back and do the early part of my life as a sort of a traditional memoir. And I'm thinking about it. It's rolling around. I'm hoping to get to it shortly. But I think that would be fun.
We're going to have to take a break soon. But one subject that I definitely want to talk about is editing, because, hooray, I have two other editors on the phone. let's see, Catherine, you were supervising editor at NIAID Press for 10 years, and you've edited some of our field's top authors, right?
Yes, I have. I was thinking about it just the other day, and I probably have edited something like 500 novels at this point. I've been editing for well over 30 years. So, yeah, I think I've edited some absolutely wonderful, wonderful authors. My crowning pride, I think, as an editor, it still remains Jane Rule. I edited Memory Board by Jane Rule, which I consider the finest lesbian novel of the 1980s, if not of the 20th century. I think she's one of our really significant writers. And I was very privileged to edit a couple of books by Isabel Miller, the author of Patience and Sarah. So those two are highlights. But I've also edited the aforementioned great Lee Lynch, and I've just had an amazing run editing some of the best folks that we have working today, including the last writer that you interviewed on your show, Elizabeth Karen Callmaker, who is absolutely the queen of romantic fiction in my book.
I want to mention for younger readers or those who aren't aware that Jane Rule wrote the novel that Desert Hearts, the classic film, is based on. It's been out for 30 years now, which is hard to believe.
It is hard to believe. And I met Jane Rule at Sisterhood Bookstore in L.A. just to show you how things kind of come full circle.
Any thoughts, Faye?
Well, as an editor, I've been mostly in my career a newspaper editor, but I'm beginning to do some content editing for lesbian authors, and I'm really enjoying the experience. And I think everyone needs a really crack editor, and Catherine certainly has been one. And there are not too many that, you know, really help shape what people write, and we all need them. Every writer needs a fabulous editor. And if there's one point I can make about self-publishing, which has come up with some wonderful, wonderful stuff that might never have seen the light of day, I also feel that the one thing that's missing from self-publishing or small publishing is really good editors. I can't say how much they are needed.
I couldn't agree more, Faye. It's very, very hard for me to read self-published work for exactly that reason, because I look at it and I think, oh, this could have been such a good book.
That's the point. You're not criticizing. You're thinking,
no, not at all.
A good editor could have done with this. And that's the shame, right?
Like Faye, I spent most of my career, more than 30 years, in newspapers, magazines, etc. And I am thoroughly enjoying editing. And I should mention that Faye is a content editor for Bywater Books, and I am also an editor for Bywater Books. I appreciate so much, Catherine. 500 books, I can't even imagine.
If you live long enough.
And you're good enough.
I guess so.
I want to talk a little bit more about editing and collaborating, but first we're going to have a song, so please neither of you go away.
All right.
Okay.
But now I'm glad to be a woman. I'm so glad to be alive. Let go of the children.
And this is the Sandra Moran Radio Book Club. We're talking to Catherine V. Forrest and Faye Jacobs. And we just heard I'm Glad to Be a Woman, Glad to Be Alive. And I'd say that's pretty apt for the show. I do want to ask each of you about editing. Catherine, what are some of your credos as you edit?
What an open-ended question.
On purpose.
First of all, I'd like to add just something to the discussion that we were having before, in general, just the books that Faye and I have edited, and also you for Bywater. You know, one of the pleasures of editing over the decades that I've been at it is just watching the change in our literature. And I remember when An Emergence of Green came out, which was, mid-80s, and I considered that book a post-coming-out book because, virtually everything that we wrote before then, it all had to do with the discovery of our sexuality and trying to deal with it. And just over the years, we've just expanded into so many different areas. A lot of our romantic novels, which are, I think, unjustifiably pigeonholed into some sort of often substandard or some belittling sort of a category. A lot of them are very, very good literature with really astounding portraits of really accomplished women in very interesting professions. And we have books that deal with parenting, with the various places that we occupy on the gender spectrum. Our books today, don't you agree, Faye? They're, and Elizabeth, I mean, they're just, this is an absolute cornucopia compared to when you and I were young,
Faye. Absolutely. Such a wide range of people, of professions, fluidity of gender and all of that. It's not a formula anymore. There are lesbians writing lesbian fiction about all manner of things. It's not old-fashioned anymore. It's contemporary literature, which I think is fantastic.
It is, and there's a level of sophistication and breadth that I think is amazing. Right now I'm reading, just to make a comment, an absolutely brilliant, brilliant novel by Sarah Schulman, and we have absolutely wonderful authors like Carol Anshaw, who I think is as good as anybody writing today, and of course all of our Brit sisters who just occupy all the bestseller lists. There's just really so much to be proud of in our books. Anyway, to get to your question, Elizabeth, in terms of editorial bugaboos, I would say probably I've taught classes in fiction over the years, and always before, I would start out with a whole class on characterization. That would be my start, because I always thought that was the most important facet in any work of fiction. And, of course, it's still central and incredibly important. But today, my first class is the opening to the novel, because there is nothing more important in this world of limited attention spans. If your novel doesn't open well, you're pretty much a dead duck with a great many writers. The other thing that I look at always is use of point of view. There is nothing that will show you the sophistication of a writer more than her grasp and understanding of point of view and the power of it. Where you place the reader in terms of what you're trying to accomplish as a writer, that has to do with the effectiveness and all of the artistry that goes into a novel. And also, I think another important ingredient that, astonishingly enough, I see really absent in a lot of work that I look at is the visual. I'm always asking, you know, what does she look like? Writing a novel is more than scene and dialogue. It's also visual images of the characters, especially we live in such a visual world today. So I would say that those three elements overall.
That's an excellent point. And Faye, you have a background in theater, and I'm guessing that background of collaboration, the visual, the sets, et cetera, helps you as well when you're editing. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely. The best novels to me are the ones that jump off the page and you can actually picture in your mind happening, you know, on a film, on a stage, that kind of thing. And so you try to tell people, well, your dialogue is fantastic, but when they sat down, where'd they sit? What did it look like? There's often so many missing elements, and you want an explanation of those things as well. And as for me, my biggest bugaboo on editing is so many people like to use a passive voice, and I would rather, now more than ever in contemporary fiction, please give me an active voice, not a passive. And it's, it's hard to teach somebody that lesson sometimes.
If I may interject, please show, not tell. I don't need to have three pages on how someone got out of a car.
Right.
We've all run into that. I remember a novel where it took somebody five pages to hire a babysitter.
Let's talk a little about collaborations. Catherine, you've been a great collaborator, and you have been collaborating with Claire McNabb.
Yes, that really has been quite a labor of love. Many in your listening audience may not know that Claire has been suffering from Parkinson's disease for quite a number of years and refused to let it get her down until it finally did get her down a bit. So I was very happy to work with Claire in the completion of the final book in the her 17-book series, Carol Ashton. It's just a legendary mystery series that's set in Australia, and Claire's given us kind of life and death down under for all of these very many years, and so it was a pleasure and an honor to work with Claire to bring this final book to fruition, and I'm very happy to say that it's been nominated for a Goldie Award. And so I will be in Las Vegas representing Claire, and we'll hope for the best.
It would be wonderful to
crown a great career if she did manage to win a Goldie for the book.
And should mention that the Goldie is an award given by the Golden Crown Literary Society, which has an annual convention. And you can Google Golden Crown Literary Society. And I believe you'll both be there, right?
Yes, yes. Las Vegas, here we come.
Absolutely. And it's always a great deal of fun. I'm sorry you're not going to be there, Elizabeth.
Yes, I am too. But next year I'll be able to do both the National Women's Music Festival and GCLS. So we are running out of time, and I want to ask how someone could find out more about you. I know you both have websites. Catherine?
I'm at CatherineVForrest.com, and you can contact me through the website. I'd be happy to hear from anybody, answer any questions, or just kind of touch base and share some history.
And Faye?
I also have a website, FayeJacobs.com, F-A-Y, no E on the end. And I also have a Facebook page for Faye Jacobs, author and humorist. And I'd love to talk with readers, and I'd love to talk with folks about the old days. So whoever wants to contact me, please do.
And Elizabeth, I'd just like to add just my own personal tribute to Sandra Moran, just one of the most, speaking of Golden Crown Literary Society, that's where I met her, one of the most fabulous women my partner and I have ever met in our lives, and how great that you're continuing this radio show in her name. She was a tragic, tragic loss to all of us.
When she asked me to host it, she said, I want it to go forward. I took that really great gift, and I have tried to always keep in mind what she would have done with the show in my own way. Intelligent discussion of our best authors and our best books, and you are both two of the finest.